So, morning again. We're going to come to the communion table in a moment. But before we do that, I just want to continue that reflection that Eric has already begun to have us thinking about in terms of where is God and what is God doing and what we're seeing in these days. And it was really interesting, you know, obviously Eric and I spent a long time discussing what we were going to do this morning. It was about 15 seconds before we started worship, and just to tie up practically who was going to do what bit, but you know, life is such, we've had no conversation about this morning, and yet out of this morning already, with where Eric has led us, songs that he's chosen, with what different people have shared, there's that sense of seeing something bigger than who we are. Seeing something bigger and stronger and more powerful than what we represent sitting here this morning. And we need to be encouraged by that. It's not about what we're doing. It's about what God is doing. It's about how we're connecting in to what God is doing. And we've had testimony this morning, really great that we could do that, really great we could hear testimony this morning, of how some of us, people that we know here this morning, are asking the same question and are seeing what God is doing in their situation. The situations are all very different. God is at work. God is at work in each one of us. God is at work fulfilling his plans, his purposes. God is at work doing what God wants to do. But of course the challenge for us, and it's the challenge that both David and Terry alluded to in some ways, is that's all very nice, that's all very abstract. What does that mean for me today? What does that actually, how does that actually work on a Sunday morning at the beginning of September 2019? And what does that mean in September and October and November in 2019? What actually is that going to do, knowing those things? What's that actually going to do in my life? How's that going to help me orientate my life, that sense of how I'm being led by the Spirit? How's that going to actually help me orientate what I'm doing in line with where God is leading and what God is doing? So there's a very practical outworking of the very conceptual reality. It's been really interesting for me over the summer that we've done normal church in abnormal places. So as we've gathered together, each week there has been the opportunity for prayer, worship, teaching, sharing. There's been opportunity for mission and evangelism. All the things that we would place as being of central importance on a Sunday morning have been happening on every Sunday morning. Just not here. And not necessarily in ways that we've been familiar with. But they've been happening nonetheless. Anybody else see that? Yeah? And one of the things that became really apparent to me over the summer as we've been meeting in these different ways is we've given more space for the building of relationships. Whether that's looking at a yew tree and marvelling at the kids climbing up and down it, whether that's been playing croquet. Who knew that Margaret was such a mean croquet player? Sorry, Margaret, if that embarrasses you. Whether that's been walking with people that we wouldn't normally have the opportunity, the space to chat with and discover things about their lives. Whether that's been sitting around a picnic table and sharing food together. Whether that's been standing on a beach with a dirty old bucket and wondering what on earth is going to happen next. In all sorts of different ways, deeper connections, sharing of real stuff has taken place. Some feedback I had from somebody after the very first week that we met together in this way, down at the country park, was the feedback in that I didn't really know these people. I didn't really know what to say. I wasn't sure what I could chat about. 5 hours later, we were having to be thrown off the site because we'd spent so much time chatting to each other. And yet on a Sunday morning, if we go beyond the magic half an hour for tea and coffee, it's, I've got other things to do and other places to be and other pressures to meet. Something was happening at a much, 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 much deeper level than we can achieve on a Sunday morning, the way we do Sunday morning. Now, I appreciate not everybody's been able to be with us for all of those meetings, or maybe even any of those meetings. And as we look to the future, we need to think very carefully about how we arrange things in ways that are accessible, but without compromising something really important. So, looking forwards, we need to recognise we're in a time of transition. I introduced some of these things at our July church members meeting. Oh, which reminds me, forward notice, church meeting, 15th of September, not the 22nd as previously advertised, 15th of September, because we will not be meeting here on the 22nd, but we will be meeting here on the 15th. So at the July church members meeting, I spoke about how things were likely to change in September and October. We are continuing to experiment. Some of your hearts are going, yay! And some of your hearts are going, oh, for heaven's sake. What's he going to do now? It's not just me. These were put out there to the meeting, and the meeting had an opportunity to reflect on these and to come back on these things. So we are going to continue to experiment. And in this season of experimentation, we are going to do some things that are familiar. Phew. We're going to do some things that are familiar in new ways. And we are going to do some new things. Let me explain. At least twice each month, we are going to do what we normally do. We're going to meet here. We're going to set up chairs. We are going to have instruments, and we are going to have sung worship in the way that we do now. 2 Sundays. Usually, that will be the first Sunday and the third Sunday of the month. And when there are 5 Sundays, as there are in September, we might even do it 3 times in a month. Woo-hoo-hoo. Steady on now. But one of the things we learned over the summer is that by tacking tea and coffee on the end of the service, there is a danger with that. And the danger is usually me. Because if I go on far too long, then that squashes the time for tea and coffee and the opportunity for people to chat together and to build relationships. You know that, and I know that. So what can we do differently that takes that pressure away? So how about this? We're going to do fellowship at the beginning. If you go to somebody's house as a guest, as a visitor, and you arrive there, and they invite you in, I'm assuming you get past the front door, they're just going to go, ooh, who are you? Go away. They invite you in. What's the first thing they say to you? Would you like a cup of tea or coffee? It's what we do in British culture. We invite people in and we offer them a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. We make them feel welcome. Yeah? And so we're going to do that. That's the plan. that as we arrive, we will start with a time of tea and coffee. And that way, if we've got people who are coming in to visit, coming in to look, coming in to view, maybe they're friends or family, we can welcome them. Genuinely welcome them. It's not just a kind of a quick shake of the hands at the door and say, oh, it's nice to see you, or go and grab a seat and we'll see you in an hour's time, or if I'm speaking, 3 hours' time. We want to welcome people. We want to make them feel truly comfortable. And the way that we're suggesting that we do that is to do something we always do, but to do it in a new way. It's familiar, but we're doing it with a new twist. We want people to put relationship building as a central outcome of what we're about on a Sunday morning, not as something we just tack on to the end. Now, you could argue the most central thing we do when we come to worship on a Sunday morning is to worship. Quite right. But that doesn't mean that we can't also make people feel welcome. And we want to make that a central plank of what we do from this point going forward. So there's a familiar thing, coming to worship, but a familiar thing in a new way, just changing the way that we do tea and coffee. What's really new is this. On the second Sunday of each month, the plan is not to meet here, but to do something active. One of the observations that's been made of the Western Church, one of the greatest criticisms of the Western Church, is it is overfed and under-exercised. In other words, we turn up week after week after week after week and we get fed by scriptures, and that's great, I'm not criticising that at all. But there's never an opportunity to put it into practice and to learn by practice what God is actually doing out there rather than in here. And so we are going to change that focus. We're going to do stuff out there, not in here. So the first thing that we're going to do next week is there's the Littleton Show, as I said earlier, and we're going to go and support that as we did last year. And we will have an opportunity of seeing and hearing what God is doing in Hairstock and Littleton and joining in and supporting Christians who live in those two districts, and to be part of that and just to encourage that, to bless that. Next month in October, the plan is to do Harvest. Hooray! We're going to have a Harvest celebration. And we're going to do that out there, not in here. Hang on a second. What's the plan? The plan is this. We're going to go gardening. Anybody here like gardening? We're going to get our hands dirty. You see, one of my challenges with the way that we often think about Harvest is we are a million miles away from the soil in which our food is grown, or from the animals that we consume as part of our food. We're a million miles away from that. The nearest some of us ever get to that is the supermarket, where it's all clean and packaged and full of plastic and all that kind of stuff. And we celebrate Harvest in this very kind of, you know, we plough the fields. When was the last time any single one of us ever ploughed a field? Apart perhaps from Stan.
Not recently.
And not for a while. Yeah? When was the last time that most of us ever got out there and scattered seeds that we're going to turn into food? It's just a million miles away from our experience. And so we're going to celebrate Harvest with our hands dirty. We're going to do some gardening. And as we do some gardening, we are going to think about the soil. We're going to think about the way that God has given us resources. And that as we tend, as we steward, as we shepherd in the places that God has given us, so we see the provision of God for real. And we give thanks. And then we're going to finish with a picnic lunch. So we're going to go and have a morning, we're going to go and do some gardening, and then we're going to have a picnic lunch together. And we're going to do that to celebrate Harvest. How does that sound? Sound okay? Yes, there is a wet weather alternative. We can go inside and do some gardening inside. Or you can wear wellies and waterproof. But that's the kind of thing that we're looking to do on that second Sunday. We might end up doing some decorating for somebody. We might end up doing somebody's garden. We might go and do a garden clearance for somebody who's an older person, shut in maybe, unable to do it for themselves. I've got no idea where God's going to lead us in this journey, in this experiment. But the fact is, what we're looking for are opportunities where we can come together in a practical way, make a difference in people's lives, and worship God. We can do that with our voices, but we can do that with our hands, making a practical difference, demonstrating God's love in action. And we can put our words into action and have an impact in this community. So you might know people who might be candidates for that kind of support. By all means, have a chat with them and then let me know if they'd be, if they'd like us to come and do a little bit of decorating, or if they'd like us to come and do something practical in their home, in their garden. It might be that we go and pick litter from the streets. And as we do that, people are going to go, "You're worshipping God as you pick up litter, you're mad." And we're going to go, "Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right." You know why? Because God loves you, and so do we. And we're going to put our faith into action. We are not going to hide our faith in a community centre. We are going to put our faith front and centre on the streets and in the homes of people in this community. Is that okay? Yeah? The other change that we're suggesting is that on the fourth Sunday, we're not organising anything for anybody. We're giving you, and I will support you to do this, we want to support you to do things that, that are meaningful for you and to gather people around you. So, what might that be? So it might be that I might organise a walk, as we did a few weeks ago, and I'm going to say, I'm going to go for a walk on a Sunday morning. And as we walk, we're going to worship God, and we're going to chat, and we're going to pray, and we're going to do all the things that we would normally do in here, but we're going to do that out there. And there are people that we've met over the summer who love to go walking, and who would join us on a Sunday morning to go for a walk. It doesn't have to be on a Sunday morning, it could be on a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday evening. But we're going to turn the things that we're interested in into ways of gathering people. It might be that, you know, that like Terry, you're a knitter. And it might be that you say, okay, I'm going to gather a group of people together and we're going to knit. Or crochet, macrame, I don't care, any kind of crafty kind of thing. We're going to gather some people and we're going to knit. We're going to do stuff. And as we're doing that knitting, so we're going to talk about stuff. The stuff that really matters. The stuff about life. And we're going to ask the question, where is God in that stuff of life? It might be that there's conversations going around about starting a book club. And it might be that people go to a coffee shop or go to a pub or something and they gather together in a different kind of place. And they read a book and they talk about spiritual things. The fact is that we've all got interests. We all know people who've got interests. But their interest isn't in here. And so we need to go where the people are because God's already there. And God's already stirring the questions where they are. And I'm afraid to tell you this, you probably realised it already, but they're not coming here. So we need to go where the people are. And so I want to encourage us to do that, and I'm going to support us to do that on the fourth Sunday every month. One of the biggest barriers to mission that's been established for the last 30 years is that Christians are too busy on a Sunday morning to go and actually be with their friends and their families. I'm taking away the excuse. I'm taking away the reason. I'm taking away the barrier. So we can go and be real with real people. But out there rather than in here. Now, I fully expect as these things go on that some of the people that you meet with, either that we meet with on the second or the fourth Sunday, are going to go, you know what, actually, I quite like meeting with you guys. Can I come and be part of what you do on the other 2 weeks? I fully expect that to happen at some point. May not happen straight away. But I also expect for the impact of this church to double in 6 months. What I mean by that is in 6 months I expect there to be more people connected with this church through what we do out there than there are who gather in here on a Sunday morning. How many churches do you know that have doubled in size in 6 months? Would that excite you? Would that encourage you? I believe, statement of faith, I believe through what we do on a second Sunday and a fourth Sunday, that God is going to double the size of this congregation. Not necessarily on the first and third Sundays within 6 months. It wouldn't surprise me if it's more than that. So we're in a place that is in transition. We're on the cusp of some things that are about change. Other changes that are coming in this autumn season, we've mentioned one of them already this morning, which is David's training. As David begins his training, so David needs to do some work in a placement. And one of the things that we need to talk about at our next church meeting in September, September the 15th, change your diary if you've got down for the 22nd. One of the things that we need to do on September the 15th is we need to look at how we might, as a church, be able to play a part in David's training. What opportunities might we be able to give him? And what might that look like? And how might that release some additional resources for us to do some of the things that we're doing in this new season moving forward? And finally, the other change that's taking place this autumn is that the discipleship group that's been meeting on a Tuesday is about to become two groups in September. And the next group is aimed specifically at young adults. People aged late teens into their 20s. Just in time for Harry to go to Exeter. Oh! It's not for that reason. We're looking to get together a group of young people. I've been in conversation with some young people. David's been in conversation with some young people. There are a number of young people who are serious-minded disciples of Jesus who want to grow in their faith. And so we want to bring them together. And we want to help them find a way of doing something that is culturally relevant to them, that encourages them, that blesses them, and that allows them to develop skills of leadership and all those kind of things in the context of their discipleship. By the end of this year, I expect there to be a third discipleship group coming out of the existing discipleship group. There are conversations that mean by about Easter next year we might have a fourth discipleship group. What that means is by that point we have got something in the region of 40 to 50 people potentially who are part of the discipleship group. Discipleship groups. We have a network of places in which the people that we meet on the second or fourth Sundays, who may not come here on the first and third Sundays, have got places where they can grow as disciples of Jesus. What's stirring in you? What's stirring in your heart? What are you hearing God whisper as I share these things? Are these things encouraging you? Exciting you? Are they filling you with dread? All of the above, says Terry. What's in your heart? And then I'm going to share something from Scripture. And then lead us in communion. What are you hearing from God? What are you hearing from God? What's God saying to you? Should do it a different way. If in your heart right now you're going, help, put your hand up. If in your heart right now you're feeling a sense of panic in the face of change, you might want to put your hand up. If in your heart right now you're seeing opportunities, you might want to put your hand up. if in your heart right now you're seeing what you believe to be the Spirit of God at work, put your hand up. There's a song that we sing sometimes from Bethel, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. We're discovering something of what it is to be free from the patterns and traditions of the past. And I know that makes us feel uncomfortable. But we're learning something about what it is to walk with God, to trust in God, not just to say it with our lips, not just to sing it with our songs, but to live it in our lives. And that is immensely exciting and it is immensely scary. If anybody doubts for one second that I share your sense of scaredness, be in no doubt. This could all go horribly wrong. But I don't believe it will. Because I believe, as we've been thinking and praying and seeking after God over the last year or so, that the themes that have been emerging have led us to this point. This has not come as a bolt out of the blue. We've been talking about these things since January. Before I lead us in a reflection and then communion, are there any questions that anybody wants to ask? The really important thing is, you can ask them now, that's fine.
Don't know what the questions are, really.
Okay.
Except that, you know, one wonders personally, where will I find myself? Okay, it's a matter of trust, it's a matter of faith.
We're going to get there. That's where we're going to finish. I'm going to tell you how in a minute. The answer to yes is how. Sorry, the answer to how is yes. So before I give you the how, I want to hear the yes. And I've kind of heard the yes already, which is good. What I want to assure you is that we're on a journey together. I'm not just dropping this as a bombshell, I hope. We've been exploring the things that are leading to this point for the last year or so now. But what I want to assure you is that if you've got questions, you need either to pick up the phone, you need to get on the email, you need to come and talk to me so that I can answer the questions. Having questions is not a way of saying no. Asking questions is a completely legitimate part of a process of understanding. Your questions are not a problem, even though I don't have all the answers right now. But if you don't ask the question, I can't tell you what I understand. If we don't ask the questions together, then we can't hear and understand and tease out and test out what God is doing and what God is saying. So what I want to encourage you is, your questions are not bad things, but they need to be expressed and not just held on to. Come and express when you have opportunity. And by all means, I want to be available to answer these kind of questions. I want to return now to our text of the year, which is from Esther chapter 4. I just pity Jenny. It's the next sermon she's heard from me from the end of March, and I'm going back to a sermon that I would have preached in January. You know, bad week to come, obviously not. Esther chapter 4, and I'm going to read from verse 9, if we can jump ahead to verse 9. Hathach, who was one of Esther's eunuchs, went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death, unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king." When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer: "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows, but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go. Gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. Esther was a young girl when she received the summons to be the king's wife. She and her family had no say in the matter. We don't know how Esther caught the eye of the king, whether it was the king himself who saw her and was attracted to her, or whether it was one of his royal officials who went out and saw this young woman and thought that she would be attractive to the king. To be chosen in this way was the greatest honour that as a young girl she could aspire to in the culture of her day. And to refuse would have meant her certain death and the death of her entire family. No pressure there then. We might look at the culture of the day and we might see a culture that to us appears cruel and abusive. It's likely that Esther would have been no more than 6 or 7 when she was taken into the harem and began to be trained in the ways that she would need to satisfy the demands, the needs of the king. Men with power used violence and intimidation to get what they wanted. They used their wealth and their privilege. They used their circle of influence. And the life of a young girl could be forfeit for the consumption of powerful men. Reads like the headlines of any of our broadsheets or tabloids over the last month or so, doesn't it? In some ways, nothing has changed. People are people. The difference with Esther is that Esther knew God. Esther had met with God. Esther had a faith in God, an abiding faith, a strong faith, a real faith. And the good news for Esther is that she had a mentor, a leader, someone who could help her to understand the ways of God. And his name was Mordecai. Mordecai understood something profound about the God they worshipped. And it was simply this: God does not abandon people. More than that, God is always working his purposes out. And he does that in each and every life, individually. And he does that in every community, collectively. God is at work. God sees. God knows. And God has plans and purposes. There are some who see in Esther a precursor to the cross. A single life singled out for the salvation of her people. a young person with a decision to make about whether their life is forfeit for the salvation of many. Making a decision that meant their death brought life to a nation. God's plan was bigger than her. God's plan was bigger than them. God's plan was bigger than now and will always be bigger than then. And we reflect, don't we, when we celebrate communion, that Jesus gave his life as a ransom for many. Esther was no different. Like her contemporary Daniel, she was given an opportunity to defy tradition and to break with convention. She was given an opportunity to do what was right for her generation and the generations to come, or to hide behind the conventions that were in place at the time. Mordecai understood this, and he challenged Esther to recognize that she was on this planet for a purpose, and that purpose was bigger than her. Her purpose was to save her people. Esther had a choice. She could have lived a comfortable life in the harem. All of her needs were taken care of. She was in no immediate danger, except for this one decree that would have meant her life was forfeit. She could have said their salvation was not her problem, thank you very much. Why should I risk my life for everybody else? She could have let apathy or self-interest outweigh the opportunity and responsibility that she could have legitimately argued had unfairly fallen upon her shoulders. It's not my fault I'm in this position, she could have said. But she didn't. Instead, she heard the call of God to put her life on the line, to risk everything, and to believe that God was with her. Esther did what was required of her to bring salvation in her day. Jesus did what was required of him to bring salvation in his day. We're working out what God is calling us to do and be to bring salvation in this, our day, our time, this moment. The days, the times, the cultures, yes, they're all very different from then to now. And yet they aren't, in so many ways. But the calling of God is the same. Our God is a missionary God. And the question returns to whether we are prepared to be a missionary people. Missionary simply means being sent. Being sent. It's about going and being and doing. But it's not about doing that in here, however nice that might be. We're not sent in here. We are sent from here. And where we're looking to move and transition over these next few months is an opportunity for us to be truly a sent people. So 1 week we gather, another week we go, and we discover God in the journey. The only question that remains for us is the question that Esther had to face, the question Jesus had to face, and the question we have to face if we truly want to be disciples, learners from Jesus. Are we prepared to serve him and see salvation come to this people in this day? We're going to reflect on that question as we break bread and wine. Just going to remind ourselves of the nature of our God. And the nature of our God is simply this. God gave himself for the redemption of all. So on the night that Jesus was betrayed by his friends, Jesus took bread. He said, "This bread is my body. My body will be broken for you." We're reminded of the echo of Esther, aren't we? When Esther said, "I may be whole, but I'll go to the king. And if I die, I die." When we're baptized, we lay down our lives. And we say to God that we will do all that he asks us to do. Seems to me that the longer life goes on, the further we are from our baptism, the harder it is to remember that. But Jesus meant it. Esther meant it. And I'm sure we meant it at the time. So I want us this morning, as we share bread and as we share wine, to reflect on our baptism. To remember what it is to die to ourselves and to rise again for Christ. Will you die with me again today? Would a couple of you like to come and take some bread and share it around? Thank you. After they'd finished eating, Jesus took a cup of wine. He said, "This cup represents a new beginning. This cup is my blood. It's a new relationship. The old is gone. The new is here." As Eric reminded us earlier, it's the time of the Spirit. Those of us who are gardeners know that in order for something to live, something has to die. We bury the seed in the ground so that something grows and brings life. We're going to share the cup round, and as we share the cup round, so we're going to reflect on what it means to die and to live. we live in an age, we live at a time that is very much focused on individuals. And I think sometimes as Christians we unquestionably put everything about us. It's about me. It's about my thoughts, my needs, my wants, etc. And so I'm going to kind of do a bit of a toast in a minute as we share the bread, as we share the wine. And the toast is this: my death. My death. And then followed by our life. We die as an individual. Nobody else can take our place. But we rise as part of a body, the body of Christ. So I give you my death and our life. My death, our life. Jesus didn't seek to minister in his own strength or in his own power, but by the Spirit of God that was in him. We recognize Jesus as an amazing worker of miracles. Those who were blind were given new sight. Those who were hungry were fed. Even before his ministry had been launched, his mother came to him and said, "Would you turn this water into wine?" And through the power of God, Jesus did as he was asked. We're going to finish this morning by singing a song that reflects on the power of Jesus, the power of God that's at work. And as we sing this song, you might want to reflect on where you need that touch of Jesus' power in your life. Water you turned into wine. Our God is great.